I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Grace Cavalieri is Maryland's newest poet laureate. She is the 10th person to hold that title since the first state poet laureate was named in 1959. Grace Cavalieri is also a playwright, and for more than 40 years, she's been a radio broadcaster and podcaster whose series The Poet and the Poem has included more than 2,000 interviews with some of the great figures in American letters. Cavalieri's work draws on history, pop culture, and her own life. She writes with deft insight and a sweeping command of moments both intimate and universal. Grace Cavalieri joins me today in Studio A. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Small House, No Secrets at the Fells Point Corner Theater. It's part of the Baltimore Playwrights Festival. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us today. My guest is the Poet Laureate of Maryland, Grace Cavalieri. I'd be selling her talents short if I only called her a poet. She has indeed published more than 20 books of poetry, but she's also written more than 24 plays, some of which have premiered here in Baltimore, and she's penned text and lyrics for opera, TV, and film productions as well. Grace Cavalieri is also well known as the host of The Poet and the Poem, a radio show that she's hosted for 42 years that has evolved into a podcast that's produced with the Library of Congress, and it's broadcast on the Pacifica Radio Network. Grace Cavalieri is the founder of several small press publishing and printing houses as well. She teaches and lectures at colleges and universities across the country. And for 25 years, rather, she was writer in residence at St. Mary's College. Last November, she was appointed by Governor Larry Hogan to be the 10th Poet Laureate of Maryland, and she joins me here in Studio A. You are welcome to join our conversation as well. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming live. Grace Cavalieri, it's so great to meet you.
Well, I'm with you every day, Tom. And this is the first time it's across a table, but I'm with you every day.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Because you live in Annapolis.
I do.
Yeah.
I come out of the Academy swimming pool at noon, and there we are.
There we are. You know, we try to show up every day if we can. Well, thank you so much for that. The collection that I've read is a somewhat recent collection. It's called Other Voices, Other Lives, a Grace Cavalieri collection. It was published in 2017. And it's really, it's quite something because you are the Renaissance woman. I mean, there's transcripts of radio interviews, there's plays, there's poems. Have to sort of separate the parts of your brain when you're doing these different activities?
Well, people are complex. And we all have different strands in them. And I just go into different rivers when I'm doing these things. But this publishing house was pretty interesting because they do legacy poets, which mean you have to write in more than one genre. So it was fine for me. It's a compendium, which has a little bit of everything, a few plays, some poems. And I made them put in one full-length play to show I could finish one because they're all excerpted. But I'm happy with it.
Yeah, well, you should be. It's beautiful. Do you have your book? Let me ask you to read a poem. Let's go to page 205. And this might be a great place to launch a conversation about the art of writing and reading poetry. It's called How a Poem Begins.
How a Poem Begins. It's a little thing. Could be the long O's in Kosovo, or a woman alone in the street after the hurricane sweeping Honduras. Perhaps we tell of the child beneath the flood, or the sound of the wind in New Orleans, or the rubble of Afghanistan. They say poetry is insignificant. Such a tiny voice. No one can hear. That's why we write of such little things. Insignificant things.
Insignificant things. It's as if, as a poet, you're arguing perhaps that there's nothing in this marvelous world in which we're blessed to live in, that is insignificant.
Thank you. Even a little broken piece of glass on the street could look like an emerald. Everything is noticeable. The poet notices everything, and that's exactly what you picked up.
Your talent, your gift for observation, has it evolved? You're 86 years old now. Do I have that right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and don't look a day over 40. But you're, and who cares how you look anyway?
I do.
Well, yeah, right. But the notion you have of the world changes as you get older. It certainly has with me. I'm in my mid-60s. I mean, I'm looking at the universe in a very different way than I looked at it when I was 20 or 40 or 50 even. I mean, how do you think it's changed for you?
I think the writer is born as an observer. I really do believe we come out wired that way. I believe that when the writer is small, the only way you can understand the world is through these hieroglyphics, and you decode it. And there's something about your brain that picks up images everywhere. And the writer is really not the source of anything. He or she is just a funnel of looking and watching and picking up and jotting down images and listening to that over conversation at the next table. You just are a funnel all day. And that's why life is a wonderful way to live, because you're really alive. As Buddha says, may you be awake one moment before you die. And I think that's what poetry's about.
And you are just connected, and talk about being present. You know, people use that term as a sort of, you know, rhetorical flourish now. I'm going to practice being, I'm going to be more mindful and being present. But as a poet, you are present in every second.
That's a beautiful way to put it. The monk Thich Nhat Hanh says that he meditates in order to write poetry because they're the same thing.
The great Jewish theologian Rabbi Abraham Heschel once said that awe is the beginning of wisdom. And I've always enjoyed that notion, that in order to truly know something, you have to first on some level be in awe of it before you can sort of learn it. You know, are you trying to learn the world when you're writing it, when you're making these observations and writing poetry about it?
I don't think it's a cognitive thing. I think that poetry is more about feeling and then trying to put the words to that. I have a poem about walking in the woods with my husband, and he sees something beautiful. And I say, oh, good, I can write about that. And he says, what a waste of wonder.
A waste of wonder.
Everything I see, I use for material. And he thought that was just a shame that I had to utilize it all. But that's the way it is. Yeah, it's my job.
Utilitarian notion of everything. Marilynne Robinson, another writer I admire a great deal, she writes a lot about the connection between poetry and theology. And I suppose you could almost, you know, substitute the word mythology for theology. I mean, that spiritual realm, that realm of the other that we can't quite, you know, exactly define or understand even completely. So it's not to say that poetry has to be religious, but all poetry has a dimension.
You nailed it. You have nailed it. It is of spirit. It is truly spirit. And not to be, it's not an orthodox remark to say that it's the breath of God, God being anything that gives you energy. And it is, breath is crucial to writing, but it is a spiritual state because you're working with the invisible. When you create something new, you're collaborating with the universe. It's never existed before. So it's kind of a holy act. You're creating, and it's a good way to live.
Ms. Robinson once said that even people who aren't religious enjoy a good sermon, you know, and the art of sermon and preaching is a particular art, and that's a particular form of writing and performance. But I wonder if the same could be said for poetry. Even people who don't consider themselves, you know, readers, or if they aren't, in fact, regular readers of poetry, even if you're not a regular reader, you'll know when there's a good poem.
Yes, Mary Oliver taught us that, didn't she? She's now a household term. But I think that people are hungry for something, and they want hydration. They want to know what's going on, you know, and they want the truth. And the poetry, one thing poetry does is it rinses off language so that we get rid of all the dross. We're in charge. That's our job. You're welcome, Tom.
And on behalf of a grateful nation, thank you, Grace Cavalieri.
And people want that. They don't know they want it. Poetry has a bad rap, though, because it has been taught in such an arch way that people don't feel it belongs to them. but we're changing the world. And everyone is entitled to write and to speak. Some have more elevated language than others, but everyone has a story. And that is what the new poem is about.
The new poem. Now, so that's a dramatic change then from the classical canon of poetry?
We actually trust the classical canon because we, of course, our ancestors, our antecedents taught us how to speak. But the new democratization of the word is that everyone is entitled to the right to find out who they are and to say it. And all we do as teachers is mold that and make it vertical.
And not only entitled, but encouraged, because who we are and having some understanding of that is really a sort of central tenet of why we're here.
Well, being human would be the first reason we're here.
Yeah.
And poetry is access to the most human qualities there are, because there's nothing to get from it except to tell the truth. And it has other virtues. It slows you down. You know, that's not a bad thing.
I'm so
hardwired,
not
you know.
In this world, absolutely.
Yeah, and it makes you appreciate nature more because, as we say, we notice everything. To appreciate life is not a bad thing. And, as I said, it cleans up language for everybody else. And it makes you less lonely. Because
less lonely? How?
Well, if I say something that I believe the deepest part of me, and you read it and you say, oh, my gosh, I have always thought that, but never said it. What has happened between us? I mean, that really is, we have made a contact, and that's a bridge, and the world is less lonely for that.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful notion. And when it comes to the truth, this is a particularly interesting time for truth. You know, we live in this era of so-called fake news, which I still contend is a formulation begun by Jon Stewart in The Daily Show back in the day when he was promoting his shows. I remember seeing posters in Manhattan of Mr. Stewart and the team of The Daily Show, and they'd say leaders in fake news since, you know, 2 months ago.
I forgot.
You know, I mean, I have never done a scholarly study of this, but I heard Jon Stewart talking about fake news a long time before I heard Mr. Trump. But when so much so-called knowledge is out there from any number of sources, some of which are credible, some of which are clearly not, and people are choosing to say, well, this source is going to be truthful, this source is not going to be truthful. Where does the artist, where does the poet fit in that panoply?
Oh, that is a great question, because the poet is the conscience of the world. So they're bipartisan. And I think when you go into yourself and go into your intuition and what you believe, you can trust that. That's the gold standard. And because there's nothing to get in poetry, that's the difference. Because there's no stall in the marketplace. There is no commercial value to it. What do we have to lose? That's the great thing. I think it's great that you can't make any money in poetry, because then you are free. And then you say what you see and what you believe. And I think that most poets nail it. I think they see the truth in the matter, because there's nothing to get but the truth. And we all watch the news, we all parse it, we all discuss it. But inside, it's a humanistic belief in life. And the human value always rings through.
And of course, commercial success of a poet. I mean, you mentioned Mary Oliver, who perhaps is the most commercially successful American poet, certainly of our generation. I mean, maybe Robert Frost or mm-hmm. Ogden Nash or somebody like mm-hmm. that. I mean, who happens, full disclosure, be the grandfather of my wife. So, you know, when I mention Mr.
Cool.
Nash, I think, you know, I want to make sure that everyone knows.
Did you know him?
Yes, quite well. Quite well. And I did not know him. We were married after he passed away, but I knew his wife, Frances, quite well. And our daughter, who is a playwright, her name is Miranda Rose.
I know.
And she's named after a sobriquet for his wife, Frances. And in a poem, he calls her Miranda.
She's got his DNA.
Yeah, so she's
I
got
hope.
His DNA. Yeah, we could all hope. But in terms of commercial success, that's, of course, only one metric to say a poet is successful. And it's in the commercial world we live in, it's a understandable impulse to say, well, you know, she's made it because she's got 50 books out and she's made a lot of money.
I'll bet she never made $5,000 a year from royalties.
Yeah.
You see, it isn't really that.
She was well known, but it didn't necessarily translate into cash.
I think that's why poets teach and go on the circuit, you know. But the book sales are impossible because the royalties really get divided up so much. You get 10%, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And the books now go for $10.
So yeah.
That isn't what she lived for.
Yeah, and you have a new one out, speaking of books, a new chapbook called Showboat. It's out
do.
Like literally
you got
today,
the
right?
First copy.
Oh, God bless. Thank
yes,
you
and
so,
much. So just save it for Sotheby's in a few years.
Grace Cavalieri, she's my guest today. She is the poet laureate of the state of Maryland. So how does poetry figure in your life? Do you think that poetry gets its due in our culture? Do you have a favorite poem you want to share with us? You are welcome to join our conversation when we come back from a quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday_WIPR. You can follow me on Twitter, @TomHallWIPR. You can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page as well. We are streaming our conversation. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on our program tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll review some of the week's top national developments with Josh Gerstein of Politico. Plus, we hope to hear from veteran NPR war. Well, we will hear from veteran NPR war correspondents Neil Conan and Ann Garrels. They're going to join me to talk about their unique narrative collaboration with the musicians of Ensemble Galilei. That's an early music chamber group. They've got a project called Between War and Here. They've been touring the country with it, and they'll be performing in Baltimore this weekend. So Neil and Anne will be here to give us a preview tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is the poet and playwright Grace Cavalieri, who was appointed last November by Governor Larry Hogan to be the Poet Laureate of Maryland. She succeeds Stanley Plumlee in that position. Grace Cavalieri is the author of 21 books of poetry, including her latest collection, Other Voices, Other Lives, and a new chapbook out just today called Showboat. You are welcome to be part of our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can drop us a tweet @MiddayWIPR. You can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. Let me ask you a bit of fact checking. I've seen in print 3 or 4 different numbers of books that you've published. I saw 20, I saw 21, and I saw 24.
Who's counting?
Have you counted? I just wondered.
I think it's
not
21. I think Showboat is 21, but I think there's a little bit of false praise because many of the books have repeat poems in them. So that one, Bordighera Press wanted a bunch of Italian poems, and so therefore I gathered them. But I do have 21 books altogether, some long form, some chapbooks.
All right. Well, we're sticking with 21, then. That's good. I want to ask you to read another poem, but before we do that, let's go to one caller in Catonsville. Greg is on the line. Greg, welcome to Midday with Grace Cavalieri.
Hi, Grace.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. I just wanted to say you guys are really piquing my interest back into poetry. I took a class in college, and I really kind of liked it. But my original comment I was going to say is you guys were talking about some Buddhist sayings and how, like, you can see there's so much to see in the world, even in the smallest things. I think the saying that came out to my head that I wanted to share with you guys was to see the universe in a blade of grass. And I really try to, like, teach my kids this and, like, love the little small animals that run around. Like, my kids love to find the bugs and inspect them. And it's just really true that you can really see so much more and experience so much more than you even realize is out there by going both inwardly and outwardly.
Yeah, thanks for that comment, Greg. Appreciate it. You know, taking the small and extrapolating meaning to the universal is something that poets do all the time.
Greg hit it
Yeah.
He really did. That is what we're all about. And he sounds like a wonderful father.
He does indeed. Let me ask you to read another one. This was one of the poems that I was really struck by. It's right at the beginning of the book. And it's about, of all people, Anna Nicole Smith. You've taken quite an interest in her.
I love
you
Anna
wrote
Nicole.
You wrote a whole series of poems about her.
And a play off Broadway, too. And I saw her vulnerability. First of all, I don't know who remembers her, but she was a bimbo. She was a model. She married a 90-year-old man and had a baby that no one could define who the father was. She died of a drug overdose. The baby was just born. And I saw her on television, and she had these beautiful high cheekbones with no makeup. And I actually saw where she could have been. The men in her life were handlers, and they would prop her up and fill her with drugs and make her a bimbo, you know. So my heart went to her. And the series, the book is called Anna Nicole's Poems, but the play is Anna Nicole Blonde Glory, because I vindicate her. This is called Anna's Estate. At the Half Star Hotel, the lower lip is painted bigger to match the dreams of being a star. She blessed the lumpy beds, bought her own silk sheets. This was before the moral issues, the legal issues, the spirit of the law, the letter of the law, the causes of death, junkies, drug addicts, probable criminal cause, bodies exhumed, frozen sperm, mystery sons, living in sorrow, wrongful death, undue influences. Before the opalescent oceans, where she could never find the truth in things, where she wanted a photo album so bad so she wouldn't die without memories. One day, standing at the free continental breakfast, dragging her sleeve in the jelly, someone walked by, touching her waist like a prayer, like an enfranchisement, and she was on her way, in a dress made for someone much smaller, trusting a stranger because he said, "The good Lord can't see what happens in Hollywood."
Oh, I love that poem. I love it. And that's such, it's a succinct, like it's a biography of Anna Nicole Smith in less than a page.
Thank you.
I mean, it's really, it's quite something. And I'm struck by, this is the thing, I guess, that when I read a poem, and I'm not an erudite reader of poetry. I mean, I read it and I either like it or I'm baffled by it or whatever. I mean, I don't study it. You know, I've had the great blessing to be able to talk to a bunch of terrific poets in my line of work and work with them when I was working as a musician. But
oh yes,
when you say she wanted a photo album so bad so she wouldn't die without memories, that just strikes me as so profound and beautiful.
Me too. Because I forget I wrote it. I don't even know who wrote this. I just am experiencing it with you.
How do you experience poetry when you're, whether it's your own or whether it's somebody else's, for the first time, that initial encounter with the poem? Do you have a sort of a routine you go through to get inside a poem?
That's a good one. No one has ever asked that. I read it for the literal sense first. Because if it doesn't make sense to you, nobody wants to go much further. So I just go through for the literal, and then I relish what I try to do is get in and see what the creator was doing. I review books for the Independent, Washington Independent, so I read about a book a day of poetry. And I always want to go in and see what they think they're doing, because I'm not the kind of critic who's so smart that thinks I can tell them what to do.
Yeah, so the poet's aspiration really matters. What the poet is trying to do.
What do they wish from that poem? What do they want from that poem? And if I can hit that, then I have had a nice time.
And when you write a poem, and as it you know, starts, you start with a blank page, and then maybe it's an image or two or a word or a phrase, or maybe it's the last line, you know what you want to use, and then you fill in the first 30 lines. When do you know you've got what you want? It's like when a painter, when does a painter know that she's done with the painting?
You know, it's always abandoned at some point. Everyone says that. But I think starting with language is a good thing. When I was teaching at Antioch, I used to give my students 10 words, 10 beautiful words, and just say, do something with these words. And because they are chosen from the student, they will mean something to them. And I think language leads to the heart. So many times I just start with beautiful words and see where they take me. But I'm being a playwright, persona is very important to me. And I have a lot of poetry. I can really get into another woman's head.
Yeah, and you do. Woman is a very interesting character whom I had never encountered before. Her name is Mary Wollstonecraft. She was an 18th century writer, and you wrote a whole series of poems about her.
I was Mary Wollstonecraft.
From her voice, right.
I was her for one whole year. My husband never knew who was coming down for breakfast, whether, whether he'd have an English accent or a Southern accent. Or, I went to the University of Maryland after having four children in graduate school, 18th century literature, and I found her. She was the mother of Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein.
Wow.
And that one gets all the rap because she married the poet Shelley. But her mother is the one that wrote the first book in English of argumentative prose about the French Revolution, the American Revolution, and she wrote The Vindication of the Rights of Women.
And so she's a feminist.
She was
in the 1700s.
Born in 1757.
Wow.
And she was also, she loved the men, which was not easy because you can't compete with men, you know, and get their love in the 18th century. So
that's a conflict. You can't be demanding to be their equal as an intellectual and then be the demure girl that
exactly.
they fall in.
Exactly. That is my play Hyena in Petticoats, which that was the perfect conflict you hit right there, which allowed it to become a play. But she was forbidden to learn to read and write, but this Reverend Clare down the village taught her that. And she moved to London, and she actually made a living as a writer, the first woman with columns in newspapers. And she had a very checkered, interesting life.
Yeah. Well, can you read us a poem about her? Then you have one, Dear Reverend Clare. This was her teacher then. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Dear Reverend Clare, you ask if hope gets me up in the morning. I say yes, not in your house where everything exists, but in mine where all things are lost. The top latch takes the weight of the door, and so it is true as I teach Liza and Everina all that you teach me. You say my child's sense of wonder is coupled with a grown person's knowing grief, and why shouldn't it be? You are talking to a girl with a pencil hidden in a broken cup on top the highest shelf, stained by curdled cream behind a ceramic pitcher where it cannot be thrown away. And that's the way she began.
It cannot be thrown away.
Because it's hidden.
She could not be thrown
away.
You
are the best listener.
Oh, my gosh. That's just, I love that poem. Grace Cavalieri is my guest. She is the Poet Laureate of Maryland. Our number, 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wypr.org. You can send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. And you can ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's go to Max in Severna Park. Max, welcome to Midday with Grace Cavalieri.
Hi, this is Max and Susie in Severna Park, and we're big fans of Grace, and it was so wonderful, Susie said, to hear your voice again on the radio, like I used to hear all the time on Pacifica, WPFW, and Grace has introduced us to wonderful poets in Maryland, like Anne Bracken, who's now one of my favorites, and Shirley Brewer from Baltimore. And there's a wonderful guy there who runs a poetry in Baltimore called Analysis. That's his name. And Merrill Leffler. There's so many wonderful poets in Maryland.
And how about Max Oakes? How about Max Oakes?
We are so happy that the governor made such a wise choice. It made us feel very reassured that government does things right sometimes.
Indeed it does. Well, thank you for that call,
And he's
Max.
A great musician, this guy. Max Oakes.
Max is. Mm-hmm. Or Max Oakes. Uh-huh. This radio program that you've done for 42 years, you talk to fantastic people. There's a couple of transcripts of some of those interviews, Robert Pinsky, Lucille Clifton, included in this book. When you encounter a poet for the first time, or maybe even a longtime friend who's a poet, what do you want to know about that person as an artist? And is knowing stuff about that person as a person, is that a window into understanding her art?
You're coming up with some original thinking here. When I read a poem, If I know the person or not, I know that it is all fiction but the feelings. That's the way I start. Because if you see everything as autobiography, that is really hard for a poet to go on. So even if I know the poet, I realize that it's a story. This poet has made up a story. But the only thing that has to work for me is if the feelings are real. And that is my gold standard for every poet, whether I know that person or not. And when I get on the radio with the Poets Laureate of the United States, which is really intimidating, I read every book they have ever written. And I usually do that during the summer because they're inaugurated in the fall. Mm-hmm. And then I don't have them with me, but I have the courage to believe I can ask questions because I just need that in my bloodstream, you know. So I'm really prepared for the big ones. And actually, I read everything that a poet comes on the radio with. So yeah. Then you know who they are.
So you're knowing the work and you're knowing the creator. And those are two different things sometimes, right?
I don't hold anyone accountable for what they're saying, mm-hmm. because I would hate someone to feel I've done all the things Anna Nicole has done, and even Mary Wollstonecraft. And so I think my feelings are there because I know how it feels to be the only woman in a boardroom. I know how it feels to have been embarrassed by someone as a female. So all of those feelings go into the characters, but the stories are their stories. And in Mary Wollstonecraft, it's the history is accurate. And I said, historians know what she did, but I know what she felt. So I put it all in my own words, but it's all accurate. So it is, as I say again, I can't say enough about it. I think that it's feelings. I think paintings are about light and music, and novels are about time, but I think poetry is about feelings.
Hmm. We have a listener, Tisha, who wants to know your feelings as the poet laureate, who's going to be, you know, trying to get people into poetry. What's your take on rap, hip hop, performance art, spoken word
art? Love it. I love breaking down old forms to making new forms, and that's what progress is. That's what motion is. I like all of it, and I follow it.
Is it underappreciated because there's this, you know, arbitrary notion of, you know, popular art versus fine art, that kind of old-fashioned
thinking? I don't think so anymore. I think media has cut that border and has softened that difference.
Lynn in Annapolis, welcome to Midday with Grace Cavalieri.
Hi, Grace. Thank you. And Tom, I've been listening forever to YPR since it was WJHU. thank you so much. I've never called and asked for advice before, but Grace, I'm going to ask for your advice. I am a little bit more advanced than middle-aged, and I'm a high creative. I'm from Baltimore, third generation, and I'm taking creative writing and poetry at a senior center in Annapolis now, but I would really like to know how to find the time in life to quiet down, to really do a lot of serious writing. My dad hunted and fished Baltimore City. Isn't that amazing? And he, you know, he was an older daddy. And my brother and I grew up to appreciate nature so strongly in Baltimore. And I really want to write about that for children to be proud of, to know what their environment's like. But it's really hard to find the time and the place to be that quiet and still to go that deep. How do I do that?
What time do you get up in the morning?
I'm more of a night owl, but I also work. I still work.
Who doesn't? I mean, but I think it's a choice. It's a life choice. We are bombarded every minute by the media, by electronics, by people's needs and wants. And if you, at this stage in your life, cannot stop and say, I am a priority. My feelings and my thoughts are my life force. And I deserve 15 minutes with this a day. I would really appreciate, I think you should find time to meditate also. And if you could meditate 15 minutes a day and sit still that long, it will gear you to be able to sit still to write poetry. It sounds as if you have something to say. And what a loss to leave this world and have us not know who you were. What a terrific loss. Is that really not worth 15 minutes a day? It is a choice. It's a life choice. It's saying, I am worth it. And I'd get up, I used to get up at 5 in the morning before my kids went to school at 7. But because I was that, I knew that I couldn't live without it.
Well, Lynn, thanks for that call and happy choosing. Let's go to Cindy in Moncton. Cindy, welcome to Midday.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for being on, and congratulations. Great.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the benefits of reading poetry in group. Mm. I meet with a group called Well for the Journey and the Benedictine Sisters of Baltimore.
Oh.
And once a year, we meet in January and have a Mary Oliver time together. And it's a beautiful thing. We actually, this year, we met on the day that she died. So we had an opportunity to mourn her loss and celebrate her life. So poetry can really be a way of opening into a meditative process. I know I used it in the beginning of my meditation practice. And it's an opportunity in group to read a poem and go into silence, and then come back and listen to what other people heard. So I was wondering if you ever did that in
That's
group
great.
Or
Thanks for that. That. Thanks for that call, Cindy. And of course, this wonderful difference in the experience of reading a poem silently and hearing a poem or reading a poem out loud. Boy, that matters a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, I do know your group of Benedictines, and I can just imagine how beautiful that was. I think it began as an oral tradition. And when we say it, the rhythm and the cadence of the breath on the page make it perfect to read out loud. And it's all about connection, human connection. Poetry's about community. It's about becoming one with some ideas. So you're doing exactly what I wish we could all do.
We are running out of time, so let me ask you to read one more poem, and this is one in your own voice. This is about your husband, who was a sculptor. He passed away about 6 years ago. It's called Safety. It's on page 225. When you talk about autobiographical stuff, you're very vulnerable in a lot of poems in this book, as I think all the great poets are.
Well, I think before I rate it, I want to say that vulnerability is strength, and that's all we have. This is called Safety, and it's true. When you were in the 9th grade and I was in the 7th, you were a crossing guard keeping order at junior high school number 3. No one was disobedient when you wore that wide yellow strap across your chest. No one bruised another, caused trouble, or so much as threw a stone. No one cracked a joke about you, a man in uniform. How did that yellow vest feed your soul to let you know someday you'd fly a plane just to feel the power of a strap across your chest? What liberation to know how to be in charge, strong and capable, flying through gunfire and lightning again and again to come back to me. Although we were young, you were 15 and I was 13, since then, I've never known the world without you. Now, I must be 12.
That's so beautiful.
That's from Other Voices, Other Lives.
Yeah. Your husband, Kenneth Flynn, a sculptor. He was also in the Navy. He was a naval aviator. And there are several poems in this collection about him. You're coming back sometime. This is too much fun.
You have really made my day.
Well, you've made mine as well. So thank you so much for being with us. And congratulations on being appointed the Poet Laureate. And we look forward to having you back regularly so we
what
can talk
listener
about poetry.
Of poetry you are.
Well,
oh.
You know, if it's good, I'm there.
Thank
Grace
you.
Cavalieri. She is the Poet Laureate of Maryland. Her most recent book is called Other Voices, Other Lives, a Grace Cavalieri Collection. And there's a brand new chapbook out just today. It's called Showboat. We'll have links to information about those books, as well as a link to The Poet and the Poem. That's her radio broadcast and podcast at our website, wipr.org/midday. Coming up, short break. Theater critic Jane Wynn Russick will join us, and she'll have a review of Small House, No Secrets. That's the new musical at the Fells Point Corner Theater. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Stick around.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.